Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvas, daf Nun, 50th daf of the Masechta. We're on Memtes. We did the Mishnah yesterday. I'm going to read the Mishnah one more time quickly. Mishnah is going to be the launching pad for what was the rest of yesterday's daf and the entirety of today's daf. Well, the Gemara is going to go off on a tangent, and so that's going to take the tangent is going to take us until tomorrow. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lulun Zeichon Ishmas Liba Gabriel Bashmuel. Let's see the Mishnah. The Mishnah Memtes Menalav Eino Chai B'Mitzonos Bito. And our father is not obligated to give food to his daughter. I mentioned yesterday that the Mishnah, as it's presented, is very raw. It seems a little bit harsh. There's much more to discuss on this, so let's go further. The Mishnah then goes on to say, expanded the following in front of the Chachamim. Bekeren B'Yavne, in the yeshiva of Keren B'Yavne, Habanim Yoshu V'Abanaz Yezonu. Look, we know that the sons inherit, and we know that the daughters get supported. Just like the support of the sons inherit after the death of the father. So the same thing is true regarding the daughters. The daughters only get supported after the father's died. After the father died, but that means to say, of course, that while the father's alive, the daughters are not obligated to be supported. So how exactly are the two comparable, the inheritance of the sons and the support of the daughters? What kind of drasha is that? How did Rav Elazar ben Azariah deduce one point from the other? So stay tuned, because we're going to be discussing that over the course of the Gemara. But the Gemara right now is bothered by a very simple question, and that is, b'mezonos bito hu deino chayev, b'mezonos bano chayev. So the Mishnah obviously is making an exclusionary point. The Mishnah is saying that the daughters need to be supported, but it sounds like from the Mishnah that the son needs to be obligated. Okay, that's a very simple inference. It's a simple deal from the Mishnah. And meanwhile, Bito Namichova, who would like a Hamitzvahika. And the Gemara says, and let's make a second deal from the Mishnah as well. The Mishnah talks about how there is no obligation to support the daughter, but there's one level below obligation, that's mitzvah. Meaning that, okay, no, one is not bound by the Torah to support his daughter, but certainly as a mitzvah, meaning as a good deed, right? The mitzvah over here, the term mitzvah over here, may not necessarily mean that, like, it's a formal mitzvah. Mitzvah over here just simply means it's the right thing to do. Right thing to do is support your daughter. The Mishnah, coming from the standpoint of obligation, so the Mishnah is telling us that as an obligation, one doesn't have to support his daughters, but as a mitzvah, one does. So, again, two points to consider from the Mishnah. Number one, daughters as opposed to sons, meaning daughters aren't obligated, sons are obligated. And point number two is that you're not obligated to support your daughter, but there's a mitzvah to do so.
Where's the justification for the sons?
Well, again, so good. Just one second. Okay, the question's excellent. Just those are the two points to consider from the Mishnah. And meanwhile, Mani Masisin, Lo Rabbi Meir, Lo Rabbi Yehuda, Lo Rabbi Yochanan Broka. Meanwhile, the Gemara says, I'm going to give you three choices to choose from. Meaning, in terms of this obligation for one to support his children, so there are three opinions that we're going to look at. And what we're going to find is that after learning these three opinions, we're not going to have a match. Meaning, if both of our diukim in the Mishnah are correct, and obviously, if you've been in the daf long enough, you know that, you know, the question is based on an assumption, and we're going to eventually change the assumption. But if both assumptions are correct in the Mishnah, so then it poses a problem, because we're going to have three opinions to choose from. I mean, no one's choosing over here. There are three opinions, each one valid, but three opinions, but our Mishnah is not going to match either one of them. D'tanya. So here the Gemara introduces us to the Braisa, Mitzvos Lazonos Abanos Kavachom Labanim. So the Tanakama of the Mishnah, the Braisa, it's not a Tanakama, I mean it is a Tanakama, but it's, as we'll see in just a moment, it's Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that there's a mitzvah. Again, mitzvah over here in this context means that you're not obligated, but it's the right thing to do. The right thing to do is to support your daughters, and it goes without saying your sons as well, to aske bitora. Now, what's this argument that one, what's this kavachomer built on? Meaning that just as much as it's the right thing to do to support your daughters, it's just as right in the kavachomer, meaning it's a logical deduction that also you for sure have to support your sons as well. So the Gemara over here says, because they're into aske bitora, that they're involved in the learning of Torah. So there's a meaning that as you support them, not only are you doing a good deed in terms of, you know, giving your kids food to eat, but on top of that also, the fringe benefit of, and the sons are obligated to learn Torah, and they're going to learn Torah by you feeding them, so the Gemara says, fine. So that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So what do we have Rabbi Meir right now? That it's a mitzvah for both sons and daughters. And again, not a chova, not an obligation, but a mitzvah. Rabbi Yehuda, mitzvah lazon ezabanim v'kavachim labanos. Rabbi Yehuda takes logic in a different direction. It's a mitzvah to support your sons, and it goes without saying your daughters, mishum zilusa. Because if you don't support your daughters, what does that mean? It means that they're going to have to go beg. And how disgraceful is that your daughters are going to have to go beg? So if there's a mitzvah to support your sons, there's a mitzvah also to support your daughters as well. By the way, interesting. I keep saying Tanakama. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are not really in disagreement, meaning they both agree that there is a mitzvah. It's just a question of which one is more obvious, the sons or the daughters. But essentially, they're both contending that it's a mitzvah. And finally, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka omer, chov lazon esabonos l'achar mitzvos aviyam. There is an obligation. There's an obligation for one to feed his daughters after the death of the father, aval b'chai aviyam, eilu ve'eilu, eino nizonim. But while dad's alive, so they are not supported. Einan nizonim, which says Rav Yochanan ben Broka, which makes it sound like nothing, meaning not a chova, not even a mitzvah. So mani masnisin. So now the Gemara points out. Now that we have three opinions in front of us, so who does our Mishnah follow? Like, well, it becomes a problem. E Rabbi Meir ha'amar banim mitzvah. Well, it can't be Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Meir of the Braisa says that there is also mitzvah to support your sons as well. The Mishnah says. That Mishnah is only focusing on daughters. And again, a diak in the Mishnah is that daughters, yes, but sons, no. So our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Meir. And E, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Banim Nami Mitzvah. And if we think we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda, so the sons also, there's a mitzvah. Again, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir are essentially making the same point. So the question is really going to be the same question. And E, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Afila Mitzvah Nami Leika. And the Gemara assumes that according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, not only is there not an obligation to feed your children while the father's alive, but it's not even a mitzvah, which again, in of itself, right? Alex, this is hard to imagine that it's not even a mitzvah. But right now, the Gemara is assuming that according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, it's not even a mitzvah. It's not a chov, it's not a mitzvah. And so therefore, it comes down now that according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, he certainly doesn't go with our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says that there's no chovah, but there's a mitzvah. So Ibai Yisem Rabbi Meir, Ibai Yisem Rabbi Yehuda, Ibai Yisem Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So the Gemara says our Mishnah doesn't exclude any one of these opinions. You can plug in any one of these opinions into our Mishnah just by changing one of our assumptions. Ibai Yisem Rabbi Meir, V'achi Kama Havei Nochai B'Mizonos Bito V'Hu Adin Liv. No. And the way to read the Mishnah is like this. A father is not obligated to support his daughters, neither his sons. HaMitzvah bibito ika kavacham labanim. But there is a mitzvah to support your daughters as much as there is your sons. And again, the kavachomer, meaning if you have to support your daughters, again, have to, over here, let me be more specific. If there's a mitzvah to support your daughters, then for sure there's a mitzvah to support your sons. V'hadik tani bito, kamash malan, de'afilu bito, achova hudaleka, ha-mitzvah ika. And then what the point of the Mishnah is that there's a mitzvah to support your daughters, but it's not a chova, it's not an obligation. Fine. That is, and that's how now the Mishnah would be able to conform with Rabbi Meir, which, by the way, as we said a number of times, it's always the best position to be in. It's a Stam Mishnah. We generally say Stam Mishnah ka Rabbi Meir. So good. So that's how the Mishnah can fit like Rabbi Meir. So v'ibay zem Rabbi Yehuda v'achi kamar, or you could say the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda. And once again, here's how we'll do it. No, a father's not obligated to support his daughters, and it goes without saying he's not obligated to support his son. Remember, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what changes for Rabbi Yehuda is just the logical deduction, meaning that there's more of an imperative to support your daughter than there is your son. So when the Mishnah says there's no obligation to support your daughter, it goes without saying there's also no obligation to support your son as well. There still is a mitzvah, and there's a mitzvah to support your son, and kavachomer goes without saying there's a mitzvah to support your daughters as well. And the only real emphasis of the Mishnah is that there's a mitzvah to feed both. It's just that there's no obligation, and you might have thought that there's an obligation for your daughter. That's what the Mishnah is contesting, that it's not obligatory to feed your daughter. And finally, the Mishnah could be going like Rav Yochanan ben Broka, v'hachikamer, you know, chayv b'mezonos bito, v'hu adin levno. One is not obligated to feed his daughter, and the same thing is true with the son. And not only is there no obligation, but there's no mitzvah as well. And the only reason why we're using words like chova is because after the death of the father, there's an obligation to feed. So we're only using the word obligation because that's an applicable word after the father's dead. But that doesn't mean that before the father's dead, there is a mitzvah. It just simply means that we're using the word chova. But really, while the father's alive, there's not neither a chova nor is there a mitzvah. Okay. In conclusion, the Gemara points out that the Mishnah really could go like any one of these three opinions, either Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Just as a general note, it certainly sounds like from the Gemara that there is no obligation, maybe a mitzvah, but there's no obligation to feed your sons or for a father to feed their children. The Rambam points out and you'll find this everywhere. First of all, we're not given ages over here. Meaning, at what point is there no longer an obligation for a father to feed his children? So in other words, generally speaking, you could safely assume that once they're self-sufficient, so you don't have an obligation to feed them, but there are no numbers given in the daf, and we'll talk later on this morning about maybe 6 years of age, but generally speaking, the assumption is that this entire discussion is after they turn six, meaning up until 6 years of age, approximately. Up until about 6 years of age, so there is a obligation to feed, meaning the children, you have to feed them. After six, there's no obligation. There's no chova. The Rambam points out, yeah, there's no chova, but we're going to see later this morning in the Gemara, and the Rambam writes it very clearly, but still, there's a moral imperative. Again, moral imperative, we'll just substitute with the word that we've been using now, mitzvah. Meaning there's still the right thing to do is to feed your children. What if you don't feed them after they turn 6 years of age? Can Beis Din take hold of any of your property, seize any of your property to feed them? So the answer is going to be no. Meaning that's exactly the discussion we're having right now. Meaning you're not, the chova. What's the difference between chova and mitzvah? It's a halachic difference. The chova obligation would mean that not only is it the right thing to do, but Beis Din can come in and seize asset and assume control of your estate if you're not going to feed them. So by saying it's not a chova, but rather it's a mitzvah. So what the Gemara is essentially saying is that the Beis Din does not have that collective ability to take your assets in order to feed your children. So
when you talk about mitzvah, we don't usually think of mitzvah that way.
Agreed. Agreed. I acknowledge that in the beginning. I'm in perfect agreement with you. Mitzvah over here just simply means moral imperative.
Yeah.
Right.
Like a secular person says, do a mitzvah.
Right. Agreed. Absolutely in agreement. No. Right. Good point. So the Rambam writes that that after they turn 6 years of age, so you're not liable if you don't feed them, but it's the right thing to do. It's morally imperative. In fact, the Rambam goes on to say, and the Rambam is going to get it from our Gemara, which we're going to see later this morning, is that if somebody doesn't, meaning you have somebody with quote-unquote older children, older in this context means above the age of six, and he decides that he wants to save a buck or two at the expense of not feeding his children, so the Rambam says that we'll publicly shame him, meaning that's cruel behavior. It's really callous, and the Rambam says that that will publicly shame the individual for not wanting to feed his children. So that's the kind of discussion we're having. But yes, it's certainly interesting, admittedly, that the Torah itself doesn't obligate a parent to feed his children. But okay, that's what comes out from all this. And then the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Broka, which is not the halacha, certainly raises an eyebrow that not only is there not a chova, there's neither a mitzvah as well. To feed one's children after they turn 6 years of age, that's eyebrow raising, and it's certainly a curiosity. And okay, but that's I have no way to wrap my head around it. But that's the it's an opinion. Amar Reish Lakish Mishum Rav Yehuda Ben Chanina Beusha Itkinu. And Usha, they institute the following. Okay, this is going to, this Usha discussion is going to take us well into today's daf nun, and that is the following. we know that the that after the destruction of the Bais Sheni of the Second Temple, so basically went into exile, right? The Gemara's in Gittin, which we'll get to shortly enough in the Daf Yomi. So the Gemara's in Gittin go on to describe how after the Churban HaBayis, so great sacrifice was made that there would that Beis Din and the yeshivas would end up going into exile. As far as Beis Din is concerned, so the Sanhedrin, so the Gemara tells us that the Sanhedrin was moved around to a number of locations, 10 locations in all, where the Sanhedrin was moved around. The last place that the Sanhedrin was exiled to was up to the north. It went to Tzipori. That was the last place. In fact, the Gemara goes on to say that Tveri, although the Gemara doesn't say Tveri, the Gemara says Tzipori, but they're stone throws away from each other. So that was the last place that the Sanhedrin was exiled, and the Gemara says, and eventually that's where we're going to be. The redemption is going to start up in the north, up by the areas of Tzipori and Tveria. So the but one of the places that the Sanhedrin was exiled to was a town by the name of Usha. Usha also is in the north, meaning the exile of the Sanhedrin went all over Israel, covered the geography of Israel. Went down to the to Yavne, it went up to Usha, it went to Tzipori, and it really covered a large amount of area within Eretz Yisrael. We're going to be talking today about the Takanas of Usha, all the institutions that were made within while Sanhedrin was in Usha. So historically, we are after, not that long after the destruction of Bais Sheni, where these institutions were made. These are rabbinic institutions that we're going to be describing right now. Most of them, I think all of them that we're discussing today, are financial institutions that were made by the Chachamim while they were in Usha. So we're going to be learning today, I think, a total of 5 different takanos that were made in Usha. I guess I'll keep a tally to see if my number is accurate. And they all revolve around some sort of financial institution. So, Ushi Tkinu, so the Gemara says, I guess we'll call this number one. Shehe Adam Zanes Banav Esmenosav Kishem Ketanim. That a person should feed his sons and his daughters while they are still young. Meaning that even after they pass a certain age, and even though you're not obligated to feed them, but still, it's an Usha they instituted, meaning, I guess they, in other words, in addition to it being a moral imperative, so in Usha, what they instituted was that you are not chayv min haTorah, but midah rabbanan. Rabbinically, you're obligated to feed your children even after they turn the age of 6. Interesting, Rashi says, Ashi avos se'aros. Rashi says until they reach physical maturation. Meaning at physical maturation, I know we live in a day and age where even after physical maturation, so the dependents are really dependent. But but back then, at physical maturation, like everyone was an independent. I mean, look, we've been spending in a Masechta talking about how the girls would typically get married as a Nara, meaning at 12 and a half years of age, somewhere between 12 and 12 and a half. The boys at 13 years of age also, right, that's when they would start talking marriage, and that's when they would start getting a job. So it's I totally understood. It's a different day and age, but still. Takanas Usha was after 6 up until maturation, so the parent is obligated to feed them. And the Gemara says, is that the halacha or is that not the halacha? Interesting, right? The rabbis made a takana in Usha, and the first question the Gemara is asking after introducing us to this takana is, did the takana take? Meaning, was this an accepted takana? You'll see this time and again, the Rambam writes this. The Rambam is very clear about this. Not all rabbinic institutions took. Meaning sometimes the rabbis instituted, and sometimes it took it, sometimes it didn't take it. Sometimes, the Rambam writes, there was machlokus of whether or not they should have legislated. Give you a good example. I'm just citing the Rambam's example. Chicken and milk. Right, the rabbis instituted that we're not going to eat chicken and milk because of concern that if we eat chicken and milk, we're going to end up eating meat and milk. Okay, nista de rabbanan. So did it take? Well, the answer is yes, meaning absolutely. It's part of the halacha that we're not allowed to eat chicken and milk together. But you know, back in the time of the Gemara, there were communities where they ate chicken and milk together, right? Within the town of Rav Yosef HaGalili, they ate chicken and milk together. So he didn't hold to the institution? Rambam writes exactly. Correct. Meaning, for him, the institution didn't take it. There was a machlokes of whether or not there should be such a takana. So here too, when Usha makes a takana that a parent is obligated to feed his children, so after they turn the age of six, again, moral imperative, we've already established, there is. We're not talking about moral imperative. We're talking about obligation. Can Beis Din come and seize your property if you don't do it? So that's the discussion we're having right now. In Usha, they instituted that there's an obligation, and now the Gemara wants to know, did it take or did it not take? Tashma, so the Gemara says, okay, so let's see. Ki avasal kamen de Rav Yehuda amalu. So a person came in front of Rav Yehuda, meaning there was a case where a father was reluctant in terms of feeding his children. It was after they turned the age of six, and they said to Rav Yehuda, okay, what kind of power do we have as a court to demand that they feed his children? So what is Rav Yehuda do? What's his response? Ya'arod yalada v'abnei masa sharye. This mule gives birth and then throws it on the community to feed his children. Okay. In other words, Rav Yehuda is very unhappy with his behavior and chastises the person for this kind of behavior. But what do you see from that? Meaning, so fine. So he's very strong. But at the same time, what you see is that Beis Din doesn't have any authority to do anything other than to reprimand. Take a look at Rashi. So Rashi says, Tashma, Delis Hilchasa Kavaseh. What the Gemara is about to show us, well, I mean, we read the Gemara already, but Rashi is setting us up. But what the Gemara is about to show us is that the halacha does not fall like Usha, meaning it was an institution that did not take. I'm sorry, let me read the Rashi. Delis Hilchasa Kavaseh, Ela Meimar Minalei, Vulai Chalkeim, Viazon, Avamecha Flo Chayfinan. You see, because what did Rav Yehuda do? Rav Yehuda publicly chastised him. Rav Yehuda was very unhappy, but Rav Yehuda didn't exercise any type of legal action against the father because the Takana Vusha didn't take. The Gemara tells us another story. Ki avasal kamad Rav Chista amalu kafule asisa bitzibura. Gemara gives us another case where Rav Chista was also. Someone came to Rav Chista and said, you know, this guy's not feeding his children. Right? They're above the age of six. He's not feeding them. What can you do? So Rav Chista says, I'll tell you what you do. Take a mortar, turn it upside down, and stand on it. Meaning, basically, get on the soapbox and valeikum valema, and say the following while standing on top of this. Orva bai bana, ve'ahu gar v'lo bai bana. Right, a raven will take care of his own children. And this guy's not taking care of his children. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, you publicly reprimand this person for not doing so. But again, learning the Gemara like Rashi. But what's the Gemara also saying? Gemara is saying Beis Din does not have any legal power to seize asset from the person. Meaning, you could certainly reprimand him. You can even do so publicly, as the Gemara just told us. But that's it. That's the extent of what we can do. V'orva by Bana, and the Gemara just gets sidetracked for a moment about the ravens. The ravens are interested in taking care of their children. Vaksiv levnei arav ashei kru. So the pasuk in Tehillim says, it's part of Pesukah de Zimra, it's one of the last parakim in Tehillim. So the levnei arav ashei kru. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu feeds everyone, even the young ravens are calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why are they calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Because their parents aren't taking care of them. So Gemara gets sidetracked because it sounds like from the pasuk that the ravens do not take care of the children. So lokasha habechivri habeuchme, the Gemara says, different types of ravens, different species of ravens, white versus black. Although to be fair, Rashi doesn't exactly say that. Rashi says that that we're talking about young ravens versus older ravens. Either way, in other words, some ravens do and some ravens don't. Gemara says, but again, let's not lose sight of the basic point. Basic point is that you can publicly reprimand somebody for not feeding their children, but that's what you can do. Someone came in front of Rava, and Rava's response was, is it good to you that your children are going to be supported by tzedakah? Meaning, really, this is the kind of position that your children, you want your children to be in, to have to be supported by tzedakah? Fine. So again, it comes out from the Gemara that you can chastise, you can reprimand, you can browbeat, but that's it. You can't. Basin does not have the have the ability to collect. And even though in Usha they wanted to institute that Basin should be able to seize asset in order to feed their children, but as the Gemara just pointed out, but that's not the halacha. Meaning it's a takana that did not take. I mean, part of the public chastising, I think that's a great question. I don't know the answer. In other words, the Gemara doesn't discuss it, so I can only give you a guess. But the maybe part of the public chastising would also include cherem, but I don't know. Meaning, the Gemara doesn't mention it. Gemara makes one proviso, and that is: what if the parent is excessively wealthy, and so money's not the issue. The issue is just simply his cruel behavior. Gemara says, then Basin steps in. And Basin is going to force the parent to feed his children. And by force, that seemingly would mean that they would even be allowed to seize asset in order to do so. And the Gemara points out that Rava forced one of the Amoraim, one of the wealthy Amoraim, and took 400 zuz from him for tztaka, meaning it was he had money and money wasn't the issue, and he was just simply... just being difficult, and the Gemara says, and to that he could force him to give the money. Okay, I'll just make mention of it. It's an important discussion. Third Tosos on the Amud, Tosos says that we're forcing someone to give tzedakah. They're wealthy. They're exceedingly wealthy, and money's not the issue. And the Gemara says, and they're just being difficult. So the Gemara says, Basin has the ability to go in and take asset for tzedakah. This is a general discussion in the Gemara about kofen al mitzvahs. Can you force somebody to do a mitzvah? So. Generally speaking, you know the answer is yes. Meaning that again, in the communities that we live in, the diaspora, like it's hard to imagine. Meaning it's not something that we think about. But you have an autonomous Jewish people living under a Beis Din. So that generally speaking, there's an idea of kofen al mitzvos. However, the Gemara in Chulin says, Tosfos quotes it over here, that if it's a mitzvah where the Torah itself provides a reward. So then you can't force somebody to do such a mitzvah. So kibbutz avim, for example. Torah tells you that you're going to live a long life if you honor your parents. So something like that, the Gemara says, you're not allowed to force somebody to do a mitzvah. It's only for those mitzvahs where the Torah doesn't put the reward right next to it. So tzedaka, the Gemara, so Tosfos is bothered. So over here we're talking about tzedaka. We know that there's a reward for giving tzedaka. So how can somebody force somebody to give tzedaka? Tosfos asks a question. He gives a number of answers. Anyway, I just make mention of it on a different occasion. If we weren't behind, we'd spend more time. Tosfos gives three answers to that question. Anyway, back to the Gemara. Amri v'layim reish lakish b'usha itkinu. So now we're up to takana number two of Usha. So again, when Sanhedrin was in Usha, so they made another institution. And that is a kosik konachas levnav hu v'ishto nizorni mehem. Let's say a person writes over all of his assets and all of his properties to his children. Okay? They're going to go to the children anyway through Yerusha. But while they're alive, they made a decision that, you know what? We're divesting of ourselves of all of our assets. We're going to give it to our children, and they write over all their assets to their children. So, included in that, says Takanas Usha, is that they, the parents, still could be supported by that estate. That estate is still going to be providing them their food. So, Maskev lo Rabbi Zerivitem Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni gedol mizeh amru. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Takanas Usha needs to legislate that they're going to be able to be fed from the estate. Now, again, just to make this a little bit clearer, meaning if you're writing all your assets and you're gifting, they're basically gifting all their assets away. Okay, so what are they going to do in terms of food? So I guess their retirement plan, it's not the greatest plan, was to go knocking door to door. Okay, it's not a great retirement plan, but that's basically what they were looking at. What Usha instituted is that if you divest yourself of all your assets and you give them away to somebody else, fine. So you're going to now, by choice, go knocking door to door. Fine. But what Usha instituted is that if the recipients of those assets are your children, included in that gift is an assumption that you still get to, you get to still eat, you know, using the money of the estate. Now, to which now the Gemara is objecting. The Gemara is saying, I don't understand. That we didn't need Usha for that. And why not? Because Amanasa Nizonis Minachasav, who Vishto? I'm sorry. Amanasa Nizonis Minachasav, who Vishto Mibaye? So the Gemara says, look, a widow gets supported from the estate. Meaning that if a man dies, so they're part of the Tanai Ksuva, part of the contractual agreement of Ksuva, is that his widow is going to get supported. Now, that's not forever. There is going to be a limitation to that. We'll talk about it later in the Masechta. We're not going to talk about it right now. But for our purposes right now, what do you see? That there's it's a built-in understanding that the estate supports people. Here we're talking about the widow. If the estate is supporting the widow, isn't it a no-brainer that the estate's going to support you? Meaning the once owner of the estate, and now you're giving it over to your children? Of course the estate's going to support you. Why did I need Usha to legislate and to institute? So, huvi shomi ba'e, deshalach ravin bi'grasa misha mezvinich amana ubas. Amana nizonis minichasav. Let's say a person dies and leaves over a widow and a daughter. Okay? That, those are the two people he leaves over. Now, who's inheriting the estate? Answer? Daughter. Daughter is inheriting the estate. But the widow is going to get supported by the estate. That's part of the Tanai Ksuva. So, what if the daughter gets married? So now, who is the, who also has now rights to this estate? The husband, the son-in-law. So, still, the almana continues to get supported. Mesa habas. Now, let's push this out just a little bit further. Let's say now the daughter's dead. So now, right, fascinating. Daughter inherited the estate. Daughter now passes on, and who is Yoresh? Who inherits her? Who inherits her is her husband. So now, Am Rav Yehuda ben Achoso, Shal Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Ayadi Hayamaisa, V'amru, Amanasa Nizon, Minachasav. So, and still the widow is going to get supported by this estate. Even though the estate now, the estate has left the family. Right? The daughter no longer is the owner of the estate, she's dead. Her husband inherited the estate. So now the estate has left the family. And still the almana is going to get supported by the estate. That's also part of the contractual obligation of the ksuva, is that that widow is going to get continual support from the estate, even as the estate moves away from the family. So now the Gemara just revisits the question. Hovi shtomi baye. So what do I need Usha for? What do I need this special institution of Usha that, you know, if a person gives all of his assets to his children, they're going to get supported by the estate? Isn't that a no-brainer? The Gemara says, not necessarily. So the Gemara says, look, in the case of the widow, the assumption is that we take care of the widow. So when I say we, I mean the estate takes care of the widow. Well, who else is going to take care of her? She had a husband. The husband's no longer there. So the estate takes care of the widow. And it doesn't matter where the estate goes. Goes to the daughter, goes to the daughter's husband. It doesn't matter. Meaning, we take care of the widow, period. But when it comes to a man and a woman who are gifting all their assets over to their children, you could have made the argument and you could have said, okay, what was their retirement plan? No retirement. All right, they will continue working. Meaning the man, the husband's still around. He's still fine. A little bit older, but he's still fine. So maybe the plan was that he's going to continue working and he'll support himself and his wife. So that's what I needed Usha for. Takanas Usha is to tell me that no, that's not going to be our assumption. Our assumption is going to be is that even after having gifted all of his assets over to his children, but still with an assumption that he's going to be supported as well. So Kamash Malan. Okay. E baye lohu. Once again, same follow-up question. Meaning we know that Usha legislated, but what we don't know is, did this legislation take or did it not take? Exactly like we asked by the first institution of Usha. Did it take or did it not take? So the Gemara, to which the Gemara says, let's see. So, Hilchasa Kavasei, Lechasa Kavasei, Tashma. The Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yonasan, Havakamei. So we have two Amorayim of Eretz Yisrael. Asa Ugavra, Gachem Nashke, Rav Yonasan. So a person comes over to Rav Yonasan and kisses his feet, right? Such recognition and thanks to Rav Yonasan. So he kisses his feet. So Amalei Rabbi Chanina, my high. So Rabbi Chanina turns to Rav Yonasan and says, you know, it's great that they love the Talmidei Chachamim. It's great that they love the Rabbanim. But that's a lot of love, right? I haven't seen recently anyone go over to the Rav and start kissing his feet. Obviously, it's a sign of unbelievable gratitude. Why did you get it? So Amalei Kosim Nechasa Levanavu. So Rav Yonah says, I'll tell you why. Because this particular person wrote off. His entire, not wrote off, but gifted over his entire estate over to his children, and the asesinu lezane. And what did I do? So I interjected, I got involved, and I forced them to keep feeding and supporting the father. So iamar bishlam alav dina mishum hachi asinu. So the Gemara says now, if we had Takana Susha, now these Amoraim lived after Takana Susha. If Takana Susha's institution was accepted, Rav Yonasan didn't need to intervene. In other words, the halacha would have just simply stood on its own. By virtue of the fact that Rav Yonasan had to intercede, that shows us that Takana Susha never took place. Or never, I should say, never took hold, I should say. So Bishlam, it's a Iyamar Bishlam Allah Dina Mishim Hachi Asinu. Ela Iyamar Dina Asinu Baye. But if Takana Susha was really in force, so then you didn't need an act of Rav Yonasan to allow him to continue eating from the estate that he gifted over to his sons.
But how did Rabbi Yochanan have the ability to force him?
Right. I was I was expecting the question. I don't have an exact answer for that. Good. So it's the right question to ask. Okay, Amar Rabbi Eli, Be'ushit Kino. Okay, we're up to now Takana number 3. We're on the very top of Nun Amar Aleph, and we are now learning together the third institution of Usha. And that is the following. Amar Rabbi Eli, Be'ushit Kino, Mevazre Zal Yivazre Yosem Mechomish. We know there's a mitzvah of tzedakah. Okay, there is a mitzvah to give 10% of your income, of your earnings, over to tzedakah. To be fair and to be honest, to give 10% of your earnings over to tzedakah, is that a mitzvah in the Torah, or is that a mitzvah midrabanan? It's a funny question, right? Where I'm asking whether or not giving tzedakah is a mitzvah or not a mitzvah. I'm not really asking that question. Of course there's a mitzvah to give tzedakah. The question is about 10%. Is there a mitzvah to give 10%? So there's a Tosfos in Tanis, that certainly sounds like there's a mitzvah in the Torah to give 10% of your income. In other words, when the Torah talks about giving 10%, the Torah's talking, of course, about giving 10% of your produce. And on top of that, the Torah's talking about giving 10% of your produce in Eretz Yisrael. And on top of that, the Torah is talking about giving 10% to your produce. First 10% goes to the Levi, and the next 10%, 4 out of 7 years, doesn't even go to the poor. Next 4 out of 7 years, it goes to you. And you bring it to Yerushalayim, and you eat in Yerushalayim as Ma'aser Sheni. Only in years 3 and 6 of the Shemitah cycle do you give 10% over to the Ani. So that's the Torah's description of 10%. What about 10% of your earnings? So Tosos in Tanis sounds like it's a mitzvah min haTorah. There's a collection of other Rishonim who say no, it's not a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Either way, the point over here is as follows: one of the institutions that was menusha is that you want to give a lot of tzedakah. Let's say you want to give more than 10% of your annual income. So fine, good, but cap it. Don't give more than 20% of your income. So ayivazves yoser mi chomish. Don't give more than a fifth of your estate over to tzedakah. Tanya Namiachi, the Gemara quotes a brayta, ayivazves ayivazves yoser mi chomish. Don't give more than 20%. Shema yitzarech lebrios. Because here's what's going to happen. Giving tzedakah is wonderful. Giving tzedakah is an excellent investment opportunity. However, if you give away all your money to tzedakah, now I know I'm going all the way to the extreme, but just to make the point, if you give all your money away to tzedakah, you're going to need tzedakah. So in other words, don't do that. In other words, give tzedakah, and if you want to give more than 10%, that's great, but don't do so at the expense of others. Okay, don't become a burden to society because you decided to give all your money away. And so therefore, the Anusha, what they instituted is cap it at 20%. So the Gemara says that there was an incident where one person wanted to give more than 20% and his friend said, no, don't do it. And And the Gemara then identifies that this is Rabbi Sheva. V'amri lav Rabbi Sheva, v'lo hinichu chaver v'mana Rabbi Akiva. So the and according to another version, it was I was Rabbi Akiva wanted to give the money. It was Rabbi Sheva who prevented him from doing so. I'm sorry. According to the second version, flip it. But okay, either way. I'm Rav Nachman v'itemer Rav Acher by Yaakov Maikra. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk. Now, mind you, by the way, that we're about to quote a pasuk to explain it to Kanasusha. Right? You realize right away that what are we doing over here? So it's an asmachta, meaning it's not the pasuk over here is not really the source behind this halacha. If it were the source, then we wouldn't need to Kanasusha. It's an asmachta. It's a way of connecting the Tekana to Pesukim in the Torah. V'chol asher titein li asir asir nalach. Right? Yaakov promises the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and anything you give to me, I'm going to give 10%. So, v'halo dami yisura basar li yisura kama. Gemara over here says it's a bit of a mathematical challenge. In other words, 10% of 10%, right? I'll give 10% and I'll give 10% of the balance. That doesn't get you to 20%. So the balance will be 90. 10% of 90 is 9. So it's 19. It's not 20. So Amar Avashi Asrin LaBasraki Kama. So the Gemara says no. It means 10% and another 10% of the original. Meaning it's just, the second 10% matches the first 10%. So, but okay. An Asmachta in the Torah that describes how you shouldn't be giving more than 20%. Amar Avshimi Barashi Vishmos Alalu Mismat Mos Vahochos. And the Gemara says now. We have so far today gone through three Tekanas Ushas. Good. The Gemara here gives us just a little bit of a mnemonic to help us remember the order of these halachas. They keep getting smaller. Mi'isma'amos v'holchos. V'simancha ketanim kisfu u'bizbazu. The children write and they squander their money. It's an aphorism. It's just an expression to help us remember, right? Sometimes kids are not responsible with money. So ketanim kisvu, the kids write and they squander their money. It's to now that you have that expression, so now you remember the last three halachas that we went through. Ketanim, that you gotta feed your children even after they turn 6 years of age. First institution of Usha, Kisvu. If you write your entire estate over to your children, you still get to be supported by the estate. Ubizbizu, and if you want to give tzedakah, don't give more than 20%. Okay. On this last one that we just did, the Gemara did not ask the question of, is this accepted halacha or not? So just from the context, it sounds like it is accepted. Meaning on the first two, the Gemara says, is that the halacha? And in both occurrences, the Gemara said, no, it's not. Meaning it's not the halacha. So just in context, it sounds like from the Gemara, this takana stuck. Meaning this is an accepted institution of Usha that you should not give more than 20%. See the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim wrote a sefer called Avos Chesed, and he talks about that there are instances where one is allowed to give more than 20% to tzedakah. There are a couple of exceptions to this rule, that in fact the person is allowed to give more than 20%. See the Chafetz Chaim who discusses this. Okay. Amar Rav Yitzchak. Continuing in the Gemara. Randaf Nun Amar Aleph. We're just a little bit down from the top. Be'ushit kinushi u'adam izgagal im b'no ad shtemisrei shana. Mikan ve'elech yorid imo lechayav. And how long should you tolerate your children? Without any context whatsoever. If I just left the question like that. I know, it brings a smile to all of our faces. So, but how long should you tolerate your children? What is the Gemara asking over here about tolerance of your children? So the, it means... let's say that they're not totally on board. Meaning, you know, you can't really belt them down. You can't get them to sit and to learn and to study at what point in time do you basically you let it slide? So the Gemara says up until 12 years of age. So Ashtei Masrei Shana Mikan Ve'elech Yoridim Ol Lechayav, and after that, so then the Gemara says now you start. Now you start pressing, now you start pushing. Take a look at Rashi. So Rashi over here writes, Yoridim ol chayav, lirdosa b'rtsua, uvechoso lechem. Okay, now, mind you, I know Rashi's writing, and I know Rashi's harsh, Again, the in today's day and age, maybe, you know, don't let's not take Rashi literally. Just in case you didn't understand Rashi, what Rashi was saying is that you hit him and you withhold food from him. So again, the idea behind the Gemara is that as they get older, so you should tolerate less. That's the basic idea in terms of the actual application. So maybe not to the extent of Rashi, but certainly the idea of the Gemara is that as they get older, so then get a little stronger with them. Any of the Gemara says Vahamar Le Rav Le Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Batsimi Bar Shis Lo Tikabo. Any child under the age of 6, don't accept them into the yeshiva. They can't sit, they can't handle it. Meaning that's just. Don't try it. But Barshis Kabil Vesafir LeKetura. So the Gemara says, but once they turn 6, so then that's it. Take him into the yeshiva, accept him, and stuff him like an ox. Stuff him like an ox. You'll see that expression a couple times. It basically means, right, try to get as much information into them as possible. So the Gemara says, in Safir LeKetura, Mi Yoreinu Yoredim Alechayev. Gemara says, yeah, no, there's no contradiction. Meaning, if at 6 years of age they can handle it, good. Take him into the yeshiva, but don't be oppressive. Meaning, don't bear down on them, right? If they want in at 6 years of age, allow them entrance. And not only that, but like really load them. Load him with information, and then but only after. But from 6 to 12, like in other words, don't bear down. If they want in, fine. After 12 years of age, then you start bearing down. The Gemara says also we can draw another distinction in terms of Mishnah Torah Shabbat Mishnayos. So the Gemara says there, don't bear down, meaning okay, give him some room to breathe. But Chomish, the Gemara says Chomish, no, teach him Chomish, and even if it means you got to sit him down and you know be a little stronger. So in terms of Chumash, the Gemara says maybe that's the difference. The Gemara says, "Damar Abai Amar Le'aim." Abai quotes his foster mother, "Bar Shis LeMikra, Bar Esel LeMishna, Bar Tleis LeTanisa." So 6 years of age, Chumash, meaning that's when they should start learning Chumash, and 10 years of age, start going over Mishnayos, and 13 years of age, they should start fasting. Meis Leis Uvitinokos Bas Tresar, and for girls, it should be 12 years of age. Amar Abai Amar Le'aim, Bar Shis De Tarka. Le akrava biyuma demishlem shis lochaya, and as long as I'm quoting my foster mother, probably more than any other amora in the Gemara, Abaye quotes his mother. Now we know it's not his mother. The Gemara Kedushin tells us that Abaye was orphaned; his mother died right after he was born. So whenever he quotes his mother, he's talking about his foster mother. But he obviously he feels very strong connection with her. He quotes her all the time throughout the Gemara, and every time the Gemara quotes him, he always refers to her as his mother. So it's not his biological mother, but obviously he feels a tight bond with her. So he says, "I'm really my mother told me that if a child reaches 6 years of age and is bitten by a scorpion, so lochai is not going to live. So my asuse, so what do you do? Well, in other words, what do you do to cure him? So mirdasa didaja chivre bishechra. Take the bile of a white vulture, mix it together with a little bit of beer, nashve veneshkaya, and have him drink it. Okay, the Gemara gives us a tried antidote to the bite of a scorpion. The machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos over here, whether this is to be administered before the bite in order to provide some sort of pre-therapy, just a
prophylaxis.
Right. It's a right to develop a resistance, or are we talking about after he was bitten? Okay, machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. But anyway, as you know, anytime the Gemara gives medicinal advice, don't try this at home. Meaning, it's not for us to use the medicine of the Gemara. This is not me going off on a limb. This is already going back to the time of the Gaonim. The Gaonim said, don't try any of the medicine in the Gemara. Hi, Bar Shasa, Detarkle, Zibora, anyone bitten by a bee, Biyuma de Mishlim Shasa, Lochaye. At 6 years of age, a bee bite is terrible. So, Maya Susa, the Gemara says once again, medicinal advice, Atsusa, Dedikla, Bamaya, Nishpai, Vinishkaya. Mixed together. A date palm together with water, have him drink it, and that'll be a therapy. And again, Rashi tells us in terms of whether it's we're talking about before or after. Amar Rav Ketina Kol Machnes is Beno Pachus Mi Ben Sheish Ratzach Harav Ve'ina Magil. You try to put your kid in yeshiva before the age of 6, forget about it. The Gemara says he's going to be running and you're not going to be able to chase him down. He's not going to like it. Igad Amar, the Gemara gives a slightly different version of what we just saw, and that is Chaver Rav Tzenach Ravein Magil. Oh, so no, you give him a head start, and you give him such a head start that he's already learning before the age of 6. And his friends are going to be trying to run after him, running over here, not meaning literally run after him, but meaning try to catch up to what he knows, and they're not going to be able to do that. V'tarvai Yisra, the Gemara says, and once again, both Gersos are correct. Depends on the child. Chalosh v'gamir, meaning he'll be weak, but he'll be learned. One who is weak versus one who's strong. Meaning, if he's precocious and you see that he has an interest in learning, and before 6 he wants admittance into the yeshiva, great. If he's not precocious and he doesn't have an interest, then don't put him in yeshiva before the age of 6. I'm Rav Yossi Rabbi Chenin Abushit Kinu Ha'isha Shemachar B'nechzim Alog B'chaya Bala Umesa. Let's stop over here. We're about to do the next Takana Susha, so we'll save this one for tomorrow. Just a good mnemonic, by the way, to help us remember. It's we're in Tzufas Daf Nun, so we're in the 50th Daf, so this was a Daf that talked about how you're not allowed to give more than 20%. Right, a fifth of your assets over it. So just a good way to help you remember that these are the Gemaras of Takana Susha. That was one of the third Takana Susha. Okay, we did a bunch of them today. We got a couple more to finish up tomorrow. And God willing, we'll make up some ground tomorrow as well.